welcome to another episode of The Antique Vintager, where each week Jeff Eller, The Antique Vintager, discusses vintage jewelry, determining value, styles, and the relationship to the times it was made. Remember, just because it's old doesn't make it valuable. Let's get started. Oh, that's right. It's time for another Antique Vintager podcast. And the one and only Antique Vintager is Jeff Eller sitting across the table from me here. And you know, Jeff, it is so interesting, and it's particularly interesting for me this week because we have gotten so many pieces of Victorian and Edwardian jewelry right here on the table. So you're going to be telling us all about it. So if you get a chance, after you hear the podcast, during hearing the podcast, you can always go to our website, theantiquevintager.com. You'll see pictures, little videos of all the great items that we're talking about here today. So, Jeff, why don't you take it away? Queen Victoria.
Well, Queen Victoria was probably the largest celebrity of her time. And as you've amply noted several times over the course of the last few years, is she was much, much more celebrity than the Kardashians ever thought about. But everybody that has been a celebrity and influenced fashion, influenced product, has taken their cue from the royal household when Victoria was queen.
When did she become queen?
She became queen in 1837.
And how old was she?
18.
Wow. That was pretty young to become queen of a country.
She had a rough time in the very beginning. People tried to run over the top of her, but they found out that she was small but steel. And she presided over the empire at a time when it was doing its largest expansion, developing the most modern products, changing fashion was becoming something that could be afforded by the everyday man, and the world was changing from an agrarian to an industrial world at the same time that she was leading the country.
So how did she influence, or why is jewelry important during that period?
The jewelry reflected the times. At first, it was gold woven into patterns, woven into forms, like her wedding band was a serpent. And the idea was that it was for infinity. The snake that you used as a wedding band was the concept that it was immortal. It lasts forever type thing to her love.
It shed its skin?
It shed its skin and renewed itself, yes.
Oh, if we could only do that today.
Well, pretty much we could do it. We just don't. And then
let's not go there, Jeff.
And then she influenced the brooches with a depiction of everything from bees to frogs.
She was very much into nature.
She was very much into nature. She recognized nature for the value that it was, not only for the peacefulness, but for the aspect of continuation of man, and some of the finest things that mankind could have was reflected in nature.
Well, the beauty.
The beauty.
The beauty.
Yeah. She simply admired beauty.
So where do we go from there with this story?
Well, the story evolves. England was in terrible debt when she ascended the throne because of the Napoleonic Wars that run up huge debts, but they at the same time were moving into an industrial age. The steam age was upon them. The first trains were being built. Steam engines were used to pump water out of the mines to where the mines could be further exploited for coal, for gemstones in India, for gold in South Africa. All this was happening during this period of time. And the British Empire covered Africa, Caribbean, Middle East, and of course India, which was a huge subcontinent unto itself. The concept of the large gemstones coming into the British Isles let the designers, and she handpicked the designers. Yeah, interesting thing is that she picked up early on the value of having her name associated with something.
It's called branding.
Called branding.
Exactly.
And it was not by any great pre-plan. It happened over pairs of gloves. When she had her gloves made, they had her imprimatur on them, which was her initials. Mm-hmm. And one of her handmaidens was selling her used gloves. And they were selling them because they were gloves to the queen. Now, these were used garment. Gloves had a much stronger usage in her time than they do today. People rode horseback. If you ride horseback, you use bridles and things. Your hands take a beating without gloves.
Well, were there any other things that the handmaidens took and tried to sell out there while we're on this subject? I got to know.
Actually, I'm probably sure there was, but the gloves are the one story that is prevalent throughout the times type thing. You know, it's the only comparison we have to Queen Victoria is the movie stars of the 30s, the 40s, and even today. Something is valuable more than its intrinsic value by who owned it. And she recognized that value right off and expanded on it greatly. People didn't become a jeweler that sold her gemstones. They became the jeweler to the queen.
Exactly.
And that was a license, and that license enabled them to make a lot of money because anything they made up for the queen, she licensed them to be able to sell to the general public.
Did she get a percentage?
She got a percentage. Hmm. The crown got a percentage.
And that wasn't a tax. This was a percentage to the queen?
This was a percentage to the queen. It went to her royal house.
So is that how they became rich?
That helped them become rich.
Okay.
They were already rich. It helped them become immensely rich.
Hmm.
Now, it wasn't only just jewelry. Albert, her husband.
Prince Albert?
Prince Albert. We have a can of Prince Albert tobacco. He licensed his picture, his endorsement on tobacco products. He licensed it on tea products. He licensed his value to horse tack. The tack rooms of England were full of Albert licensed saddles, bridles, whatever. And Victoria had her own.
Okay, so we have, this is the first in the licensing of items, which is such a huge market today. How does it relate to some of the jewelry that's sitting here on the table?
Well, we have several pieces that were direct copies of what Victoria wore. We have a brooch that was one of the most popular designs and copies that were used throughout the 1860s to the early 1900s, actually. And it had all the aspects of the mourning thing, the swallows. The swallows always return every year to the same place.
Capistrano, isn't that right?
Well, that's here. Okay. There they had the swallows. The return of the swallows was a big deal, and it was the eternity concept. And black onyx was a mourning stone.
This was after Prince Albert died.
That was after Albert died.
And that's actually an urn.
That's actually an urn. It's a funerary urn, not the urn that you put ashes in, but a funerary urn that you put at the tombstone for flowers and things.
And that's what the little pieces of the turquoise here represent, flowers.
Right.
It's lovely design around it. It actually has, looks like pine cones or some type of cone.
Those are pine cones.
Are they? Yes.
And the concept there was the evergreen tree.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So what type of value is mourning jewelry valuable?
In itself, no. If you can attribute it to Victoria's times, for instance, the little onyx rings of today, which are, we sell and everybody else sells, type thing, even though ours are vintage, they don't sell for very much, under $100 by and large. A couple of $100 for the nicer ones.
Okay.
If I can attribute it to Victorian times, to a Victorian manufacturer,
right?
They sell for $400 to $800.
Wow. And yet we sell them for, the ones that we get are reproduction ones under $100. But if you can find truly a Victorian piece that is attributed to a jeweler from that time.
Right.
$400 to $800.
Asprey is a jeweler that we think of immediately for the onyx. Produced a lot of the mourning jewelry.
Okay.
And the funeral homes actually sold mourning jewelry. The concept of the lock of hair on the backside of a onyx pin or pendulant was sold at a funeral home a lot of times. Manufactured maybe by Asprey's or Girard's or any other licensed jeweler, but it was sold by the funerary homes.
So you had to get that lock of hair before you closed up that coffin.
That's not a problem. People didn't run away.
Okay.
They had professional people that wove the hair.
Oh my God.
This was also during a time when the trade guilds were really gaining their strength, and the union concept was coming into play. Industrialization. Cities were getting immensely larger because that was where things were made.
That's where the jobs were.
Where the jobs were.
That's right. So we've talked about that piece there. We've got a lovely piece here that is a pansy, and it is a deep purple, and it's enameled. Now, interesting on this piece, I mean, I know you're going to give the history, but I just want to tell the folks what I can tell them about it, is that it is not only a pin, but it was also for a watch, and it even had a flip-up to be able to be worn on a chain. So this was a very versatile piece of jewelry. Now, what can you tell us about this one, Jeff?
That one, we actually have a catalog from London of a house of jewelers that specialized in Edwardian, Georgian, and Victorian jewelry.
In fact, there's a picture of the pansy right here in the catalog that I believe Emerald's taken some pictures of and some video of. Totally unique.
And the pansy we have just happens to be made by Asprey.
And this one was Bentley and Skinner, which were jewelers to... Skinner was a jeweler to the queen.
A jeweler to the queen that paid to be jeweler to the queen.
Wow. It's such a fascinating piece. And that enamel wear has been something... I mean, you can tell it has a little wear on the bottom of it, but gosh, it is, the detail is just fantastic.
Well, they started making the pansy as a piece of jewelry in the 1880s. Mm. And so it was one of the first, shall we say, not mourning type of jewelry that Victoria started wearing again. Although she mourned from the day that he died to the day she died, she lightened up on what she wore and how she wore it. She recognized her obligation to the fashion world and to the English manufacturers.
Now, she was queen for how many years?
63 years, 7 months.
And how long was she queen after Albert died?
Well, Albert died in 1860, and she died in 1901.
So another 40 years, really.
40 years. And
it's a long time to mourn.
You got to remember, this was a time of the fashion magazine.
You talked about that in the first one that we did. That was so interesting about fashion magazines.
And the fashion magazines immediately recognized four things that she brought to the table that have stayed till today. Number one was the brides wore white. Mm-hmm. She established that as a de rigueur for a bride.
Did they not wear white before that?
Usually colors. And the reason was, of course, that it didn't show dirt. But the other thing was that by her time, you were traveling by train and not by stagecoach. Mm. And the English had the first stagecoach. We have them, but they had them first on that standpoint. And they were open air carriages, and, you know, London was not a particularly dainty, clean place.
They still have the open carriages that they used when the Queen is on display.
Absolutely.
And she waves just right.
But the big thing today is most of the houses, all the houses virtually, are fired by oil or gas. In her day, it was just beginning to switch over from wood to coal.
Coal. Oh, we all know about the coal. Yes.
Oh, and
yes.
White was not a particularly great thing, so they wore gray or blue for a wedding dress.
Or if it was white, it turned gray. One of the two.
One of the things that she wore white for, though, was the development of lace. She loved lace, and she loved English lace. And she also, what did she do? They became lace makers to the Queen.
Oh, well, she kept a tight handle on that, shall we say.
Absolutely. And she
rein might be a better word. A rein, yes.
She designed patterns for lace.
Wow.
And she also set it up to where it became a popular thing, number two on this chart, for using of lace coverlets for baptisms.
Hmm. Interesting.
All the little kids, you'd see them in
all those lacy outfits, yes.
Little lacy outfits wrapped up. Three, of course, became the mourning jewelry and the mourning clothes. The mourning clothes, she went from, she wore gowns that showed the cleavage, shall we say. And it went from that to having high-necked, white blouse type of thing that was usually ruffled, mm-hmm. With an overcoat of dark black, super dark blue outerwear to show mourning.
Well, I know we've all seen the pictures of Queen Victoria, and she looks rather dowdy, right?
Right.
And those are the pictures. You don't see that many young pictures of her, do you, really?
Well, it's really surprising because that was when she had the greatest influence. She had 9 children that lived.
Wow.
9 children. Now, she was only married from 1840 to 1860.
20 years.
Yeah, birth control wasn't in. 9 children.
And she liked to fool around.
Yeah. She was the queen of the ball. That term was coined for her. And her children married throughout the houses of Europe, and she was known as the grandmother to Europe.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you know, speaking about the queen and everything, we have a lovely, lovely crown pin here. Now, we need to note most of the jewelry that we have here is on loan, so we could do this. There, I think the pansy is for sale, but most everything else isn't. But this jewelry right here of the crown, it has seed pearls, a sapphire. Oh, my God, Jeff, that is such a lovely piece, and the delicateness of that.
Surprisingly, she never wore that type of brooch.
Really?
Really. But
yes,
she had it developed and gave to her handmaidens.
So they could be princesses?
So they could be princesses. That tied them all together. They had their crown. They just happened to wear their crown on their bodice where she wore hers on the head.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, Dak copied a particular type of crown that she wore.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the crown that she was inaugurated in as a queen,
mm-hmm.
but the crown that she wore to, let's say, a ball or something of that nature.
You know,
and every year, she changed the design of the crown that she gave out so you could date that design by year.
Wow. And not only that, what's really interesting is the old boxes that we have here are actually from English jewelers of that period.
That makes it all the more for people that are into collecting. And there are people that do nothing but collect Victorian jewelry.
So what kind of price, just to give an idea, what kind of price is something like this? This has the little seed pearls that we talk about. It has a little bit of diamond in the crown and then a sapphire in the center. Do you have any idea of what that might have sold for back in the time and how that would compare in price today?
Well, actually, it was more expensive at the time that it was made. That was probably been 3 to 6 months of a middle-income Englishman's salary to buy that piece. And today that would sell for about $2,000.
Wow.
Which is 1 month. Or
really?
Less than a month for most people nowadays.
Really?
Really.
You're making me feel bad, Jeff. Okay. Anyways, that is a wonderful piece, and that is a truly... Now, where would you date that piece from? What age?
That one is before 1860.
Oh,
she didn't do it after 1860. She only had those made up from 1840s to the 1860s.
So if you didn't get one before that and you still were a handmaiden, you were SOL.
You got a piece of onyx, probably.
Okay. All right. Now, the only other piece that really is Victorian is this wonderful piece right here that originally, I happen to know, was what they called a stomacher. Because
right.
The chain, I'm going to take it out of here, so we really, this has been shortened for the person that liked a shorter one. But originally, what was a stomacher?
Stomacher was a piece of jewelry that was worn around the neck that actually laid on the stomach. And the idea was that it didn't interfere with all the rest of the things that she may have worn, which was she had a diamond necklace that she wore quite continuously that she called a Turkish diamond.
Okay.
The diamonds didn't come from Turkey, but the gold work and things were a present from the Turkish Ottoman Empire.
Now, this piece right here has a very old diamond in the center. Now, where would that have come from?
India.
And that is literally a mine-cut diamond. That was cut at the mine, wasn't it?
That was cut at, was cut at the mining area of India, which was... right outside of Bombay, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then this piece that's the stomacher, which is the part that was down really on the stomach, and if you look in old pictures, you'll see some of these. But this one is rose gold.
Rose gold, yes, which was it would probably be Indian gold. It could have been South Africa. South African gold had a high content of copper.
Which gives it the rose color.
Which gives it the rose color.
Now, it has all kinds of diamonds. It has a little dangle here. This, I believe, is this 9-carat gold, which is what
the
queen...
That's 9-carat gold. By the way, she set up the rigidity of the gold standards. I mean, there was... very little 24-karat gold done after she became queen.
Mm-hmm.
She recognized the fact that you get a lot more gold out of your reserves if you're making things in 15-karat or 9-karat.
Why did they use that? Why didn't they use 14-karat?
There wasn't any standard at the time. They were setting the standard.
Okay, so
they set a concept of assay standard. Any piece of jewelry that left England had an imprintor of who made it, when it was made, and where it was made, and it was tested.
Okay, so they developed the standards of
right.
the time.
Right.
Now, over here in America, we use 10-carat, 14-carat, and 18-carat. Just as a little aside, where did that come from?
Actually, that was to differentiate it from the English.
For real?
Yeah.
Wow, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 10-carat was, you know, just a little bit more than the 9-carat. The 14-carat was a little less than the 15-carat.
How about that? That's very interesting. Now, on this stomacher piece, how do you determine value on this piece, and what would be a value?
Of course, the diamonds have a value, and the gold itself has a value.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard value, but we're not talking hard value. We're talking about an antique piece, a collectible piece. So you ascribe it to the popularity it had at the time.
Okay.
Was stomachers highly popular? Only a short period of time. So would it bring as much on a value relationship as your pansy that stayed popular once
mm-hmm.
she made it popular?
Right.
No. But for its time, it still is a popular piece. And you've noticed that the person that had it has reduced the length of the chain to where it can be worn as an ordinary necklace.
Correct. Stunning
right.
piece. So what kind of value does that have today?
That one about 6,000.
Wow. And yet it doesn't really have a lot of diamond. The hard intrinsic value, this has to be, quote, collector value on this piece.
Well, it has more diamond than what one would think. There's about 5 carats there.
Wow. Well, that center diamond is pretty good size, although
yeah.
it doesn't, you know, mine-cut diamonds in that, and that's particularly a mine-cut diamond, it doesn't sparkle the same as what we see in diamonds today.
No, and it, that actually is a rose cut, even older than a mine cut. That's a rose cut diamond. Most of them were taken out of the jewelries and recut. So that's rare from that standpoint.
All right. Well, you have got to go to our website, theantiquevintager.com, to check out the little video that Emerald has just been doing here today on this. I think you'll find it fascinating. We've also done some on the crown. We've done the pansy, and we've done that lovely piece of mourning jewelry that we started off with. Now, we talked a little bit about the can Prince Albert. We have a couple more pieces here. I don't know if we should try to do the Edwardian real quick here. What do you think?
Actually, I think the Edwardian is something large enough impact that we should probably set it aside for its own valuation.
I think that sounds great.
Because his age was the age of platinum and the age of filigree, and that just never stopped.
So if you want to learn more about platinum jewelry, about the filigree that we so much love, you got to tune in to next week's podcast where we'll be talking about filigree, we'll be talking about the diamonds. And on top of that, King Edward wasn't king for very long, was he?
1901 to 1910. But he had an outsized relationship with the magazines of the time.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife, they set the standard for fashion.
Right.
They picked up when the Victoria dropped out. He actually was somewhat of a playboy when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And he set the bon vivant style. The pictures of Lord Byron and things with their collars open and the idea of the padded shoulders and everything, all things from him.
Now, just out of curiosity, how old was he when he became king? He was much older. He waited a long time to become.
He was born in 1841, I think, and he became a king in 1901, so he was 60 years.
And he waited a long time for this. So you got to tune in next week in our podcast with the Antique Vintager, and it's always on theantiquevintager.com. You got to wait because next week Jeff will be talking about King Edward and about platinum and all the beautiful pieces that came out of that area. A lot of people love this era, and I personally do too. So, Jeff, hey, another successful podcast right here on the Antique Vintager.
Okay.
All right.
And just remember, I may not have something, but I know where to find it.
That's right.
And if somebody has something that they're tired of, I know where to sell it.
You know, that's right. A lot of people don't know that we have a huge business of buying and selling. And of course, this is something that you continue to do. You're always buying and you're always selling. So if you've got a question for the Antique Vintager, all you got to do is go to our website, theantiquevintager.com. And of course, if you want to find out more about the pieces we're talking about today, check out theantiquevintager.com. I hope you'll sign up to get notifications when new things hit on the Antique Vintager. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and I've been privileged to be here with another episode of the Antique Vintager with my husband, Jeff Eller. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Antique Vintager. Make sure to visit our website, theantiquevintager.com, for video clips and pictures of the show. Jeff also looks forward to your questions and comments. While you're on the website, theantiquevintager.com, don't forget to sign up for email notifications. Tune in next week for The Antique Vintager. Bye-bye.